I just said, I like change. Deanna would tell you that I like change as long as I'm the one initiating change. This morning, I'm sitting here speaking to a mostly empty room into a camera. That's a change. It's a change that I didn't anticipate, neither did you, and I certainly would not have initiated the empty room part. Love the camera part. Love that we're able to be live streaming and potentially reaching more people than ever before if people are connecting in with us online. But the last 2 weeks, there's been lots of change that's been brought to us. Change that we did not ask for, change that we did not invite. We are living in the midst of a global pandemic, and people are afraid. People are afraid of getting sick. People are afraid because they see their super funds diminishing quickly. You go to the supermarkets and literally it looks apocalyptic. When I can't believe it. We've seen zombie TV shows and movies, and that's what it looks like right now. People are living in fear and panic. I read reports that there's even been assaults and even a stabbing over things like toilet papers or a pack of minced beef. As I contemplated these things and even walked around the shops near my own home, there were moments where the emotion was so great. I was literally, this will come as a major shock to you, at a loss for words to describe it. The best way I found to understand what I was feeling was I had a troubled heart. My heart was deeply troubled. So as I began this week preparing for what I might bring to you, we've been going through the book of 1 Corinthians, and as I evaluated everything, I thought, that's just not where we need to be today. Maybe we'll be back there next week, but not today. I just felt God leading me to John 14, where Jesus says, don't let your heart be troubled. And as I processed that and I started preparing and thinking about what I might share, it seemed very familiar. And I looked back, and it was exactly 1 year ago today that I preached from that passage. I found that quite ironic. We were talking about how to live in the midst of all this a year ago. So today, I want to, from a very different world that we're living in, bring you some thoughts, again, from John chapter 14. It'll be very different than the last time, but just to maybe help us deal with our troubled hearts. And really, the question we're going to wrestle with today is, how do we as followers of Jesus respond in a global pandemic? How should we as Christ followers be responding in a global pandemic? I think we can learn a lot from Jesus' teaching to his disciples when he told them not to let their hearts be troubled. So a little background. Jesus had just been betrayed in the upper room with the disciples. And he was about to leave the disciples. He told them, I am about to leave you. Peter was going to disown him, as were all the other disciples. He was on his way to a horrific beating that would conclude with a death on a cross. And we know the rest of the story, that didn't keep him down in the end. But it's into that space, into the space of his own chaos that was about to be upon him, that he spoke the words, don't let your hearts be troubled. And then he bookends it with a similar statement in verse 27 where he says, don't be troubled or afraid. So in the midst of his own trouble and anguish, Jesus tries to comfort his disciples. I think that's a great pattern for you and I today to look at and think through as we go about this week. The word troubled, where he says, don't let your heart be troubled, that word troubled literally means stirred up, confused, to cause distress. Anybody feeling that way right now? I think if we admit it, if we're honest, most of us have had moments at least where we're troubled this week. Now, the disciples, why would they have been troubled? Jesus is the one that's about to go through all this stuff. Well, for the disciples, they had been all in with Jesus. They had come from many different walks of life. They were fishermen and tax collectors, business people, and they had left everything at his request to follow him. They said, yes, we'll follow you. Not only that, but processing the fact he's leaving them after they've chosen to follow, he's also told them, you're all going to deny me. You're all going to walk away. That would have caused them much grief. It would have caused them to feel like failures, like they couldn't go on with it. And then Jesus, in the midst of all of that, says, don't stress about it. Those are confusing words, I would suggest to you. Don't stress about it. He says this, continuing in verse 1, trust in God and trust also in me. There is more than enough room in my Father's home. If this were not so, would I have told you that I'm going to prepare a place for you? When everything is ready, I will come and get you so that you will always be with me where I am. In essence, Jesus was telling the disciples, trust me, I have a plan. Now, the call to trust would have went counter to their emotions in that moment. I would have been thinking, hang on a minute, I've been all in with you. I've trusted you up to this point, and now you're telling me you're about to leave me. And Jesus would say, yes, I'm saying trust me. Trust God and me. Literally, the word trust means to keep on trusting. Jesus is saying, your world may be in chaos right now. My world may seem to be in chaos right now, but keep on trusting. Keep trusting me in the chaos and the confusion. He would be saying, because he claimed to be God, I am still the creator and sustainer of the universe in the midst of your troubles. I've still got this. He would have been telling them, hey, things are about to get way more challenging for you guys. But keep trusting. Keep trusting me. I'm about to be dragged into the courts. I'm about to be condemned by rulers, nailed to a cross, and then mocked by people who are looking on. But keep trusting. Keep trusting. He says, I have a plan. I'm going away, and I'm going to get things ready. And when they're ready, I'm going to come back and get you so that we can be together forever. That's my plan. Trust me. I have a plan. How many of you are planners? I'm a planner. I like a good, well-thought-out, well-structured plan. In fact, when people want me to do stuff and they don't have a plan, I really, really struggle. It's like, well, hang on. What are we doing at 2 o'clock? What are we doing at 3? You know, I like to have it all ordered. Guess what happened in the last couple of weeks? Yeah, all the best laid plans, all the things we thought that we were going to do. Jesus has a plan. I think sometimes we forget that he has a plan. When we're in the midst of chaos, all we can see is our trouble and our chaos. Kind of like when the disciples were out on the boat with him and they saw the wind and the waves and they thought they were going to die because Jesus was sleeping. All they could see was the wind and the waves. They forgot that they were with Jesus, and Jesus had a plan. When we look at our current situation and what's going on around us, we want immediate relief. We want immediate answers. We want to know when this thing's going to end. We want to know what tomorrow's going to look like. We want to know when the shelves are going to be stocked again. We want to know whether the schools are going to be open or closed. And we all have our strong opinions about that. We'll come back to that in a few minutes. But how do we respond when this was unplanned, as far as we were concerned? We need to trust God that he has a plan. What is his plan right now in the midst of the global pandemic? I don't know. You don't know. And that's hard for people like me. Some of you are fine with that. I don't have to know. But you know what? We're all day by day working through this together. We don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. Things are changing all the time. And I see people saying things about the government and saying things about leaders around the world and saying things about leaders in schools and, dare I say, even leaders in churches and criticizing decisions that our global leaders are making, our politicians are making. And can I just ask you and encourage you to not give them some grace during this time? Because they haven't done this before. We haven't done this before. And we're all in this together. We're all learning as we go. So remember, God has a plan. Jesus has a plan. We don't know fully what that is, and we're doing our best to go along that plan and be carried along with it and lean into him and trust him in the midst of that. So while we don't know what God's plan is in the middle of this pandemic, I want to tell you a few things that I do know. I know that God is not surprised. This thing did not break out and God went, boom! I didn't see that coming. Where did that come from? Oh, well, I was distracted with the bushfires in Australia, and I'm watching the silliness going on in America and their politics and all this. And then this thing cropped up over in China. Man, I completely missed that. That's not our God. He's not surprised. He's not shocked. He knew this was coming. Some things I know about God. I know that he is still on the throne. I know that he loves me. I know that he loves you. I know that God is faithful. I know that my God is in control. I know that our God will never, ever leave us. I know that our God is working all things together for good to those who trust him. I know that our God is good and he can be trusted. And if God is for us, who or what can be against us? That's our God. I know, as bleak as it may seem right now, that our God is calling us to trust him. God wants us to remember he has a plan. And when we don't understand the plan, he continually says, trust me, trust me. The world's response to our current situation is fear. The world is very afraid right now. Jesus calls his followers to live by faith, not fear. We are called to live by faith, my friends, not by fear. What does that look like? Well, living by fear looks like the chaos we see in the shops. Living by fear looks like fighting over limited resources. Living by fear means panicking when you see the stock market dropping. Living by faith is different. Living by faith recognizes that God loves us and cares about us deeply. Jesus spoke to this in Matthew chapter 6, and you can read this on your own, verses 25 down through the end of the chapter. But a summary of what Jesus was saying here is, don't worry about what you're going to eat. Have you seen the birds? The birds don't worry. I take care of them. And I love you more than I do the birds. I'm going to take care of you. And he says, don't worry about what you're going to wear. All of a sudden, the latest fashion isn't important anymore, is it? But don't worry if your clothes are going to wear out and all of that. He said, look at the lilies of the field, how beautiful they are. Even Solomon, in all of his glory, wasn't as beautiful as them. And I did that. How much more do I care for you? And he said, a kind of a biting comment, he says, why do you have so little faith? Remember, we're called to live by faith, not by fear. Jesus says, why do you have so little faith? He says, worrying about what we will eat and what we will wear are things that dominate the thoughts of unbelievers. See, friends, we are called to think differently. We are not of this world. We are otherworldly. We are called to think differently than the world thinks. He says, seek his kingdom first. And he will supply all of your needs. I think we need to settle in on that word and just think about that word a little bit on your own. Might be time for us to adjust our concept of needs even in this world today. The Apostle Paul, writing to the church in Philippi, said this, Philippians 4:19, our God will supply all of our needs according to his riches. He has everything, and he promises to supply our needs. 2 Timothy chapter 1, verse 7 says, God has not given us the spirit of fear and timidity, but of power, love, and self-discipline. We are called to live by faith, not by fear. 2 Corinthians 5:7, we live by faith and not by sight. If you look around, it's scary. If we live by faith, it's not so scary. Not only are we to think differently, but Jesus actually gives a gift for troubled times. That's what he's telling them in John chapter 14. If we jump all the way down to verse 27, it says, I'm leaving you with a gift, peace of mind and heart. And the peace I give you is a gift the world cannot give. So don't be troubled or afraid. There again, he says, don't be troubled or afraid. But I'm giving you a gift to help you out with that. He says, trust me, I have a plan. Trust me, I'm giving you peace. Peace of mind and heart. You know, the world doesn't have peace. They are living in panic right now. And the peace that Jesus gives is something the world cannot give us. No matter how hard we look for it, to our governments and to the stores and to everyone else, they can't give us the kind of peace that Jesus is talking about. Jesus wants us to have peace in the midst of a pandemic. Does that seem crazy to you? Does that seem difficult? Sure it does. But that's what Jesus calls us to. It doesn't mean the situation is not real. It doesn't mean that people are not hurting and aren't going through difficult times. The peace that Jesus is talking about is a deep-seated peace in the midst of the crisis and the difficulties. A peace that is born through a personal relationship with him, a life that is surrendered to him, a life that is, again, trusting in him. See, when we have peace of mind and heart, that will cause us to think and behave differently than the world around us. Christians, we need to be leading the way in this. We need to be those that are delivering peace because we are carrying peace within ourselves. Our behavior needs to demonstrate that. Panic causes people to be selfish. Peace leads us to be sacrificial. Those are hard words to hear, aren't they? Sacrificial. Philippians chapter 2 says this, don't be selfish, be humble. Thinking of others is better than yourselves. Don't look out only for your own interests, but take an interest in others too. That means we don't hoard, we give. That means other people come before me. That means I see them as more important than me. That means I am willing to sacrifice for you. That means you are willing to sacrifice because we view others as valuable. The early church spoke into this, or the way they lived it out speaks into it for us, that we are in an unprecedented crisis that creates unprecedented opportunity. They experienced that when Jesus was crucified and he was resurrected and he left them and the church was started. They were in crisis. They were in Jerusalem, and that early church was Jewish, and a lot of them were outcast. A lot of them were set aside by family, by friends, and lost jobs, and all of the kind of things that a lot of us may be experiencing right now. They were in the midst of a crisis. And look at what they did. Acts chapter 2, verse 44. It says, all the believers met together in one place and shared everything they had. They sold their property and possessions and shared the money with those in need. They shared stuff. They sold property. They were generous. In the weeks to come, you and I are going to have unprecedented opportunity to be generous. Sharing of our resources. There are people that I know, and I'm sure that you know as well, and maybe some of you listening in, that have already lost your jobs. And in the weeks and months to come, that will likely increase. I want to encourage you today as a church to start considering, what might this mean for me? And I'm not talking about if you lose your job. I'm talking about if you have resources still. What resources do you have that others need? What might God be calling you to release, to to help meet other people's needs. Friends, I think we've got a beautiful picture in the book of Acts of that early church that tells us how we might need to be thinking about living in these coming days. You might be sitting here and asking, wow, you're saying, trust me. Believers need to live in faith, not fear, and we need to have peace, not panic. How do we know we can trust him? How do we know that God's going to come through? Well, Philip asked the same question in verse 8. He said, Lord, show us the Father and we will be satisfied. Jesus replied, have I been with you all this time, Philip, and yet you still don't know who I am? Jesus says, trust me, I've got a past. I have a past. He says, Philip, seriously, how long have you known me? If you're struggling to believe, just think about all that you've seen and all that you've experienced with me. You have a history with me. Jesus does not ask us, he wasn't asking Philip, he doesn't ask us to just live by blind faith. Jesus says, I've proven myself already. He said, Philip, you remember that time that I walked on the water? You remember that time that I calmed the sea? And you remember when I fed the multitudes? You guys had no idea how that was going to happen, and I fed them. Remember when I healed blind people and lame people? Remember my friend Lazarus that I raised from the dead? Remember all that I have done to provide for your needs these last 3 years while you've been journeying with me, Philip? I've not let you down up to now. And that should give you confidence to trust me into the future. You know, Jesus can be trusted in the crisis that you and I are going through today because of his past. He has never failed. The year was 2001. Deanna and I and our kids had just arrived in Australia. And we came at the end of July, and 6 weeks later, we were in a hotel in Hamilton. We're getting to know what is now our home country, and it was wonderful, it was beautiful. We're laying there at night, about to fall asleep with the television on, watching the news, and we saw a plane had crashed into the World Trade Center. Then we saw the second plane come. In the days to follow that, the world was sent into chaos. People were panicking. They didn't know how we would ever get through this. God was not surprised then, and he saw us through that. 2002, there was a worldwide outbreak of SARS. God wasn't surprised. He got us through that. 2008, we experienced a global financial crisis, and we're still here today. 2009 saw the Black Saturday bushfires. And that was hard. Some of you lost loved ones in that. But God was with us, and God has continued to be with us. 2009, the swine flu pandemic spread across the world. In 2014, it was the Ebola outbreak. And in 2020, the Australian bushfires. We've been through stuff before, and God has been faithful. God has not let us down. He has not let us go without. He's provided for our needs, and we are stronger for it. In all of these things, Jesus was still there. He's worked on our behalf. Each of you could tell stories of your own personal crises that you've been through in your life, and I would invite you to think about the past. Think about how God has been faithful in your past when you didn't know how it was going to happen, when you didn't understand the plan. When you look back and see how God has worked in the past, that can give you faith and hope for the future right now. Remembering how Jesus has worked in our past gives us confidence that we can trust him today. He's worked in the past so we can trust him. He's worked in the past, and that enables us to live by faith, not by fear. He's worked in the past, and that means that we don't have to panic, but we can lean into the peace that he has given in the midst of the chaos of today. So how will we, and when I say we, I'm talking about you. I'm talking about me. I'm talking about everyone under the sound of my voice who follows Jesus. How will we respond to this global pandemic? I would suggest that we and I'm speaking for you on behalf of you, and I trust this is your heart. We're not going to stick our heads in the sand and pretend this is not real. We're not going to act like, well, this isn't hard even, because it is. We're not going to ignore the fact that people around us are afraid, isolated, lonely, troubled, and confused. We're not going to ignore that and discount that. But we will continue to keep our eyes on Jesus. We will trust him in the middle of this crisis. And when people see us, they will see a confidence and a hope that they don't understand. We're going to continue to worship God as his people. It may look a bit different. It's looked different today. And I got no idea how it looks on your end. It's been great here. The few of us that are here doing this have enjoyed it, and it's good. But, you know, I kind of thought about this through the week, and I thought, we can't have our Sunday gathering, our expression that we center our week around as followers of Jesus. And I thought, you know what, that may not be a bad thing right now, because that may give you and I the opportunity to understand that God is bigger than this space. God is bigger than our meeting. And we actually get to learn more how to be the church out there rather than just counting on being able to gather together in here. I'm a little excited about it, honestly. We're going to continue to meet where we can, small groups. It's up to you, two or three. He says, where two or three are gathered, even if that's your family, I am there. If you're meeting alone, you're together with us online in this community right now. We're going to continue to be generous. I spoke into that during the offering. And again, thank you for those that continually are generous and give. We need you to continue, and we need those that haven't. We need you to step up, because still bills to pay, and there's still needs that need to be met. And finally, and this is the absolute most important way that you and I are going to respond, we must engage with this unprecedented opportunity to share with the world where our faith is placed, where our peace comes from. We need to be sharing our story. Last week, I got home late one evening, and Deanna shared with me, and I have permission to share this story from my daughter, shared with me that Jill was really distraught. She had gone to the shops, and she saw the apocalyptic nature of things there. And she thought, is this the end of the world? Is the world coming to an end? She had a troubled heart. When Deanna told me this, I said, well, maybe I should call her pastor and he could go see her. And Deanna said, I think her dad could do that. I said, okay, let's go. So I went over and I was talking to Jill, trying to provide her some comfort, even from the scriptures, and told her, I'm not quite so sure this is the end of the world. But what she was concerned about was not herself. She was concerned, forgive me, about her one-year-old daughter, Hattie, my granddaughter, and people that she knows and loves and cares about who don't know Jesus. I shared some scriptures with her about Hattie and where I gave her what I believe is some confidence about that. But in that moment, this dad was so proud to hear my little girl's heart for people that don't know Jesus in the middle of what we're going through. You remember, friends, there's a world out there that is in the midst of fear, in the midst of panic. They don't know Jesus. They need hope. The church for the past 2,000 years has been the deliverer of that hope, and that hope is in Jesus. Remember what Jesus told the disciples who had troubled hearts? He says, hey, I'm going to go get a place ready for you. Then I'm going to come back to get you. And then he went on to tell them, and hey, you know the way to where I'm going. And Thomas speaks up and he said what everybody else was thinking. He's like, no, we've got no clue where you're going and no clue how to get there. And Jesus said in verse 6 of John 14, Jesus told him, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one can come to the Father except through me. He says, trust me, I have a plan. Trust me, I'm giving you peace. Here he says, trust me, I am the pathway. That statement defines Christianity. It separates Christianity from all other world religions. Because Jesus says, "Now I am not a way, I am the way. I am the truth, I am the life." Most people are happy to say Jesus is a way. Most people, a lot of people, trust on their good works, religious ceremonies and pilgrimages and things like that. You know what? We're not doing religious ceremonies, at least get together. That's all changed. That's all different. Those things aren't going to get us into a relationship with Jesus. It's not baptism. It's not the Lord's table. Jesus could say, "I am the way," because of his coming death on the cross and resurrection, because his death on the cross was going to make access to God the Father possible for sinful human beings. That's you and that's me. See, all of us are born sinners. We inherited that from our great-great-great-great-grandparents going all the way back to Adam and Eve. And that sin separates you and it separates me from God, because God is holy and he can't have sin in his presence. But he loved us and he wants a relationship with us. So he sent his only son, Jesus, to die for our sins. Jesus died and rose again. And for you and I, he is our pathway. We just need to admit that we are sinners and call on him for salvation. Friends, people all around the world need to know that Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life. And you and I need to tell them. If you're listening in today and you've never come to that place of understanding him as the way, the truth, and the life, you haven't put your faith and trust in him yet, can I encourage you? You can do that today. It's as simple as saying a prayer, understanding your sinfulness and your need for him, and just saying, "Jesus, I give you my life." I want to invite you today, if you're listening in, if you're watching in, and you've never done that, just say that, "Jesus, I give you my life." Let us know if you said that prayer. Let us know, comment on that, and we want to be in touch with you to follow up with you. So how do we respond in the midst of a global pandemic? First of all, you and I, we live by faith, not by fear. Live by faith, not by fear. Secondly, we embrace peace, not panic. Don't be like the world that doesn't have peace. Don't be fighting in the stores. And can I encourage you also, don't be panicking on social media. It's not helpful. Let them see us as Christ followers, living in faith, not fear, embracing peace and not panic. And can I encourage you, share your stuff and your story. Share your stuff and your story.